It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Kennedy.
I'm Bill Hemmer.
I'm Sandra Smith, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Friday, December 9th, 2022. I'm Chris Foster. American basketball star Brittany Griner is freed in a prisoner swap with the Russian government.
It was a gift to them to have an American that was so prominent and had such prominent defenders and friends calling for her release that it put pressure on the Biden administration to get something done.
We're speaking with Fox News Sunday host Shannon Bream.
I'm Lisa Brady. There's no holiday cheer and getting ripped off, so we're breaking down seasonal scams, including which clicks could be tricks.
You're cruising around on Facebook, Instagram, wherever, and you're feeling giving. It's the holiday season. You want to be generous. It makes you feel good. And you see a link that comes your way.
And I'm David Marcus. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
Brittany Griner spent 294 days in Russian custody since her arrest at an airport with cannabis oil in her luggage. President Biden at the White House yesterday announcing her release in a prisoner swap.
Standing together with her wife, Sherelle, in the Oval Office, I spoke with Brittany Griner. She's safe. She's on a plane. She's on her way home. After months of being unjustly detained in Russia, held under intolerable circumstances.
The exchange for Russian arms dealer Victor Boot does not include the return of another American, Paul Whelan, in Russian custody since 2018.
This was not a choice of which American to bring home. The choice was one or none.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken and the president say the Russians are treating Whelan's case differently as an accused spy.
We're overjoyed to get any American home, but we know there are many others who are still stuck out there. So it is the best possible news for Brittany Griner and her loved ones.
Shannon Bream's the host of Fox News Sunday.
Paul Whelan remains stuck there in Russia, and there are others around the globe that the administration says we're going to keep working on those too. Those are the tough conversations you got to have, because when you look at Victor Boot, who's been called the merchant of death and someone who deals in arms and sells to terrorists, that for a lot of people is going to feel like the wrong trade for Brittany Griner. Again, we want every American to get home that we can. And listen, Whelan's family has been very, I think, kind about this, saying like, we're thrilled for her. But I think when you look at what appears to many people to be a lopsided trade, I'm sure they're wondering why their loved one couldn't have been in the balance too.
Yeah. I mean, I guess in the end, to give, you know, credit or whatever to the Biden administration, apparently the deal was this is the deal. You aren't getting Paul Whelan for Victor Boot. And so if you want Griner, you get Griner, and that's the deal.
Yeah. So the Biden administration says we continue having these conversations with Russia. And you just have to wonder if they would have had better leverage if Brittany Griner wasn't caught in the middle of this. She's a recognizable, prominent professional athlete. And so for the Russians, it was a gift when she walked through there with something in her luggage that was, you know, illegal there. You know, she even pled guilty and said, listen, I made a horrible mistake. I never intended to break your laws. I hope that me pleading guilty will help. Instead, she's sentenced for years to a penal colony in the middle of nowhere. It was a gift to them to have an American that was so prominent and had such prominent defenders and friends calling for her release that it put pressure on the Biden administration to get something done.
Supreme Court this week. Shannon, I know you're a Supreme Court aficionado. There was an elections case and religious freedom / freedom of speech case. Let's start with the elections case. Mm-hmm. It could have major implications. What's your read on it?
It could. I think the justices, gosh, this was slated for 90 minutes. It went for 3 hours. They're really struggling with where to draw the line here, because the Constitution, as folks know, says that state legislatures are the ones who get to set the parameters and the guidelines for how to conduct federal elections in their state. So it comes up in the context of these state legislatures drawing these voting district maps, them getting thrown out by a state court or a state court judge, and then being redrawn. So the theory at the heart of the case is the independent state legislature. Do they alone get to decide issues surrounding federal elections? Or can a state court step in and say, listen, you can't do these crazy super gerrymandered districts and we're going to step in here? So, gosh, it was a showdown. And I couldn't tell you exactly what's going to happen from the arguments. I don't think that independent state legislature theory, which is considered pretty out there, is going to survive. But where do you draw the line between the state legislature and any other entity at the state level that would be able to put a check on them with regard to these federal election issues?
Yeah. And there's also a read that the founding fathers, when they referred to state legislatures, were referring to not just the legislative body, but the entire legislative process, everybody involved, including the courts, including governors' vetoes. And as with a lot of these things, with originalism, we don't really know.
Yeah. And that's what they were trying to, you know, go through so much of this. It's interesting because, you know, the people who are into textualism or originalism will say, like, what the text says, that's it. And then there are these arguments about the history, what the framers actually meant, where they used these words in other places to give us a more full understanding of what they might have meant there. So listen, the left side of the argument is that, you know, state courts should be able to step in and shut down legislatures when they do crazy things. You know, further on the right end of the spectrum is that support for that theory that it was all about the state legislatures, meaning the lawmakers alone. I don't think that straight out position has a chance of winning. I think the nuance is going to be somewhere in between.
Yeah, I mean, you use the word crazy, and who's to say where that line is? What's crazy to some isn't to others, and
yada, yada, yada. It happens in both directions for either party, because look, in New York, the state legislature came back with maps there that the state court said, these are cuckoo town partisan. There's no way these super Democrat drawn districts are going to survive. They sent it back a couple of times. And finally, the court said, all right, you're not doing it. A special master is going to redraw these, made the districts much more competitive. And it was probably very helpful to House Republicans who flipped a number of those House seats.
Yeah. And if the people who are in favor of this theory got their way, then that wouldn't have happened. And Republicans might have lost those seats. This other case, this Colorado website designer sort of, I guess, preemptively asking to not take on gay wedding clients. How is this one different than the Colorado baker that didn't want to make gay wedding cakes a few years ago that the court weighed in on?
A couple of things here. First of all, the reason in part that she went preemptively, because, you know, pre-enforcement challenges are not super common at the Supreme Court, meaning you have to have somebody who's gotten in trouble and is then now suing over the law. But for her also, there's part of this law that says you cannot express derogatory views on a particular protected class. So she wanted to put on her website, hey, I want to do wedding websites, but as a Christian, this is why I won't do same-sex wedding websites. I have respect. She says she's got plenty of LGBTQ clients. She just won't do wedding websites for them. And so she felt, and her legal team felt, like the law barred her from even putting an explanation on her website in advance about why she would only do certain websites. So I think that got them in the door, although there were a couple of questions about whether this case was ripe. But at the end of the day, this is a free speech case versus one about religious liberty. They're kind of intertwined here. But what she's saying is the government can never compel anyone, whether it's pro-LGBT causes, anti-LGBT causes, pro-abortion, anti-abortion, like the government can never compel someone to give a certain kind of speech or to sign off on something they don't agree with. And so that's her argument here, is that she would be forced to use her artistic abilities to endorse something or to give speech to something she doesn't support.
Yeah. So for example, if she had a generic template, say, for a wedding, she would have to sell that to everyone. But she's saying I shouldn't be forced to create something specifically for a gay wedding.
Yeah, just like the cake baker, which they're, you know, the case came down in his favor, but it didn't really resolve the questions. It said that he'd been mistreated by the Colorado court system and the enforcement mechanisms they had there. But yes, they both say we'll sell to anyone, but these customized creations is a different thing. Justice Barrett, I believe, was the one who asked her and said, well, this isn't so much about, you know, whether it's a heterosexual or same-sex couple or whatever. Would you turn away things that you just don't agree with your faith? She says, I won't do violent websites. And the question was, what if on the wedding website, you know, where people say our story or how we met, what if they said, we want you to craft our story, and it's that we were married to other people, we met in the workplace, we had an affair and we fell in love. And her legal representative said, no, she's not going to do that website either. And Justice Gorsuch kind of boiled it down this way. He said, so you're saying it's not about who, it's about what. So it's not about who you will or won't serve. It's about the message, the what you will or will not promote. And I will see where the votes come together on that issue.
As we now know, we sort of predicted last week without saying it outright that Raphael Warnock was going to keep his Senate seat in Georgia. So now it's Democrats 51, Republicans 49 instead of 50-50. You can say, look, they already sort of had a majority with 50-50 with Vice President Harris as the tie-breaking vote. But there are practical reasons that 51 is a lot more than 50.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even if you look at things like committee assignments, that kind of stuff, but also when you've had Joe Manchin kind of be the kingmaker here in Washington because everybody's fighting for his vote, it takes a little bit of that angst away from the Democrats because they don't have to convince Joe Manchin or get his vote on all these really tough issues. It takes away a little bit of his leverage. I mean, you have Kyrsten Sinema and kind of that mix too, but Joe Manchin has really been the thorn in the side for Democrats. And at 51, they don't have to have his vote to get some things done.
President Biden said the other day, just to wrap this up, said on Tuesday, there are more important things going on. When asked why he didn't wasn't visiting the border, he was going to Arizona for other reasons and didn't make a border stop. Opponents say, look, this is more proof that his priorities are off. They say, what's more important than border security? And so now he's been hammered on that for a few days.
He has. And to the people who live along those borders, regardless of party, I mean, they've been begging for help and have talked about how things have gotten exponentially worse. And listen, you can just go by objective data that comes from nonpartisan agencies within the government. It's the worst it's been. And that's just a nonpartisan assessment of hard data and facts. But when you hear from the folks down there, these ranchers and people who live along the border, I mean, they are in a situation where they're begging any administration, anyone in Washington to listen to them. You've got folks like Henry Cuellar, a Democrat who just got reelected down there in Texas, who has repeatedly called out the administration. You've got other members out there saying, yes, this is our president, our Democrat leader of our party needs to get down there and see what's going on. It's unconscionable that he's not down there. So it's not just Republicans saying that this is an issue. Democrats say it as well. And when the president visits a border state and doesn't go to the border, I think that's a very specific decision.
Yeah. Is there any, I guess a non-decision is a decision. Is there any hope of any kind of immigration reform coming in the next 2 years?
I don't know. I mean, it's tough on so many different levels. They haven't been able to find a place to meet in the middle. You've got divided House and Senate now with parties controlling the two different chambers. You also are going into a presidential election year where neither side is going to want to give the other a huge win. But you know, the border has gotten astronomically bad and dangerous. We've got this flow of fentanyl into the country that is taking hundreds, tens of thousands lives here in the U.S. And so I think that if we can appeal to the good nature of our representatives and senators, they need to get to the table. Now, what the administration will say is on day one, this is the first thing that the Biden administration offered up. Well, yes, you can offer things up. And, you know, if it's a messaging bill or, you know, there's no chance you're getting any votes across the aisle, which you need. I don't know how genuine that is, but the two sides have got to get it together and they need each other to get something done. But going into a presidential election year, I don't know how much the political motivation will be there.
Shannon Bream, host of Fox News Sunday. Have a good show. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
This is David Marcus with your Fox News commentary. Coming up.
Shoppers hit the ground running this holiday season, both in person and remotely.
Basically everything I could buy online.
Putting up some record early numbers in a holiday rush driven by more than one factor, says Emory University marketing professor Doug Bowman.
People being concerned about inflation, you know, maybe prices will continue to go up. And a combination of last year's issues around stockouts.
Unfortunately, this also adds up to a lot of opportunity for scammers who keep coming up with new and improved ways to trick people's money away. The Better Business Bureau says more than a third of online retail fraud reports involve fake websites. Even more, 40%, are from email and social media.
You know, one of the biggest things that we're looking out for, Lisa, this year is the real growth in the scam where you're simply presented with buying an object at a great price And then there's a link saying, in order to get this price, you have to send it to us electronically. You can't use your credit card.
Tech journalist Kurt Knudsen is known as the cyber guy.
So you can use PayPal or you can Venmo this to us, but you can't use your credit card. Let that be a big red flag. And I think we're already seeing a couple hundred million dollars estimated in those kind of scams just this holiday season alone.
Wow. So that sounds like kind of a phishing scam.
Sure, because what they're trying to do is bait you into clicking a link and handing over cash. And of course, you never get the product because it was a scam all along.
Wow. And that's not the only package scam in town, so to speak. I mean, for a while, we heard a lot about packages just being stolen outside homes. This package scam seems like something that's really been an evolving threat. What else is happening with packages now?
Lisa, I'm going to pull up a text that I got that I literally was targeted by that's going around to tons of people as well. And the text reads this: your delivery address is unusual. Your package is stuck at the sorting center. Please update your address by clicking this link. Of course, you click that link, it goes to some scam website. They're trying to gather more information from you to scam you in one way or another, or to put malware on your device. So right there, game over. You're the sucker at that point. Because there's really no connection back to that. So again, the advice here is if you get a notice like that and you didn't ask for it, it comes by text or by email, don't click the link unless you specifically ask for that to be sent to you right then. Instead, go back to where you bought whatever it is that you think hasn't been delivered yet. Look up your order history and track it from there. Don't click the link in the email or a text. Click it from the official website or when they link you to a proper like UPS or FedEx link for tracking.
That's such an insidious one, too, because so many of us are so pressed for time. We're in a big holiday rush. Are there ways to spot that that's not a valid text? What are the red flags to look for?
So having the proper antivirus protection on all your devices is really essential. What that'll do, in most cases, this will have been flagged already. And then when that link came to my phone, and by the way, the phone I was using did not have this protection on. It does now because it made that link so that I couldn't click it. And it sent a little alert that said, we think this is suspicious. So having that kind of protection and getting good antivirus on all your devices is really the way to go, because 9 out of 10 times it's going to have already caught this, so that when we're living our busy lives, they're doing the protecting for us. And so that stops this activity from getting in.
And I guess failing that, if you don't have it for some reason or haven't taken that step yet, you want to look for kind of the details. Like, you could see if it's not really coming from a legitimate source. Maybe they have a letter or two off, or they have bad grammar. There's usually something that tips it off. But I mean, they are getting better at looking legitimate, so it's tough.
Well, they're ripping off logos. I mean, if they had put a UPS logo on that text I got, I probably would have really thought that seems legit. What actually caught my eye is that when they said, like, please click this link, they didn't spell out the word please. They put PLS abbreviated, which is a little too casual for a company to be communicating with a customer. So that was a red flag for me.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people making donations this time of year. Scammers know this. How do we make sure we're donating to real charities?
So largely on social media right now, you're cruising around on Facebook, Instagram, wherever, and you're feeling giving. It's the holiday season. You want to be generous. It makes you feel good. And you see a link that comes your way that somebody reposts to a great organization that makes, I want to help the people of the Ukraine. This makes complete sense. I just have to click and donate a few bucks here. Do not click anything in social media as it relates to a charity and for giving this year. Most of it, not all of it, most of it is very suspicious. Just take that extra beat in life and say, okay, let me be more generous for my time and myself right now to give in the right way, which is simply go onto Google and look up that charity, find the official website, and obviously they're going to have links directly from their website to make a donation instead of clicking inside of a text, email, or on any of these social media scams that we're seeing going around, and it's done, instead of you just giving your money to some crook.
I know online versions of Secret Santa have been popular as well. The idea being, you know, you get a gift, but you also pay it forward. That seems inherently risky. Should you only do this with people you know, or is there a safe way to do this, you know, new high-tech version of Secret Santa?
So I haven't received one of these, but I've seen plenty of them in our research, which is take the game Secret Santa that we've played many times in life, and now it's really gone viral online where people are suggesting to just play Secret Santa with a stranger. It seems giving. It seems like, okay, pay it forward kind of gamified giving, but don't do it. It's a scam. It's a pyramid scam that goes nowhere. It'll say, for example, you know, click here, send a bottle of $12 bottle of wine to somebody, make them feel good. And then they'll get the opportunity to pass that along to someone else too. Everybody has a lovely drink and we all feel warm and fuzzy, except in this case, nobody's getting any wine and nobody's doing anything but taking your credit card information or your payment, however you sent it, and saying toodaloo after that. So it's a scam. So the only time to really participate in gift exchanges that are online is when they come from people you already know and you know it's them. And it's not somebody who got a hold of their email and now is pretending to be them. So best to do it in real life, not as safe online.
For many people, it's gift cards to the rescue. But even those are not immune from scams. What's the problem with gift cards?
Well, here's the deal. Where do we get gift cards mostly? It's mostly at the checkout. You'll see especially this time of year, you go to the grocery store, drugstore. The problem is these crooks are going in person into these stores and they will cleverly slice open the packaging for the gift card. They'll remove the back part that is a verification code, and then they will steal that so that when it's activated later, when you buy it and the funds get in there, they get an alert. The funds go in the card when you check out and they drain it seconds later. You then give the card to somebody you're hoping to be generous to, and they say, well, thanks a lot, but it had no value on it. So you've created all kinds of problems where you didn't really give a gift and then you got ripped off at the same time. And by the time you figure it out, it's done. So the answer here is look extremely carefully at each gift card that you decide to buy right now. Make sure that it is intact, that the packaging is sealed all the way around, that it hasn't been resealed. And just be an inspector when you're looking at it. And then when you're checking out, make sure that that part of the card, if you can see it, has not been scratched out that reveals the activation number that you would have to put in to use it later.
What about buying a gift card for someone online and having it sent to them? Is that safer?
So much safer. So when you, again, go to the source. So don't go buy a gift card from a gift card company online, because while there may be enticements like, hey, you'll earn extra points in this, those things might be legitimate, but at the same time, you don't have as many protections as when you buy it directly from the source. Cut out the middleman. Let's say it's Home Depot, or let's say it's Lowe's, or wherever you're buying it, go directly to the Home Depot website, go directly to the Lowe's website, and buy it directly from them. You can have it shipped to you. You then send it to them, hand it to them, or they will do an electronic version, especially as we get late in the season and it's Christmas Eve and you're saying, uh-oh, I forgot Aunt Harriet. I'm gonna send her off to the mall and, you know, I'll find a store. She's going to Macy's now. So that can be electronically sent to her. And then you just say, hey, I just did this for you. Thought it'd be easier if you got it electronically, and just make sure you got the email. I love you.
I wanted to ask you one more thing. I'm almost afraid of what the answer will be, to be honest. But how safe are we shopping on store websites or Amazon, for instance? Have scammers been able to infiltrate every part of the online purchasing process at this point?
So when we use our credit cards, not a debit card, but we use our credit cards and we never use, say, a link to a payment service where we're surrendering cash instantly to somebody else that we have no recourse on, is the safest way to go, no matter where you're shopping, whether online or in person. The use of a credit card in our country, fortunately, we have protection. So you're never, ever liable for more than $50 on any fraudulent activity. Most credit card companies will zero it out, as you know, but you've got to really scour your bills, especially after the holiday season, when in January, all your purchases start to show up on your credit card statement. Have a closer look at it. Make sure those are legit. Make sure it's the amount that you paid for it. This is the time that people scam those things. And then avoid using a debit card if you can. And also, cash may be king, but cash is never, never something you should use online in terms of sending cash electronically where you have no rights and you don't know really who's getting it.
Hopefully people can have a safer holiday season. With all of your tips, many, many thanks. Kurt Knudsen, the cyber guy, thank you very much for all of your insight.
Thank you, Lisa. And also you can go to foxnews.com/tech and we'll have all these tips for you there. And you can also find a link to sign up for the CyberGuide newsletter there or at cyberguide.com.
Fantastic. Kurt, thank you so much.
And now, some good news with Tanya J. Powers.
A new training program at the University of Pennsylvania is playing a crucial role in the lives of veterans. They're training service dogs, and it doesn't just help veterans who need a service animal. It also helps other veterans who benefit from doing the training. The Philadelphia Inquirer reports that the program is a partnership with the nonprofit Warrior Canine Connection, which describes its work as mission-based trauma recovery. Dogs are bred specifically for the program and are mostly Labradors and Golden Retrievers, breeds that are good at helping veterans with both mental and physical disabilities. The dogs learn a variety of things, from how to soothe an anxious owner to comforting veterans who are uncomfortable in crowds, the dog acting as a barrier between their owner and large groups of people. The full training for the dogs lasts 2 years, with veterans taking 8-week stints to help teach the dogs 70 to 90 commands before the dogs are matched with a veteran as a permanent service dog. All the dogs in the program are named after a former service member. To learn more about the program, visit warriorcanineconnection.org. Tanya J. Powers, Fox News.
Put the power of over 100 meteorologists and the worldwide resources of Fox in your hands with the Fox Weather Podcast. Precise, personal, powerful. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
David Marcus.
What's on your mind?
In July 2020, amid the George Floyd protests sweeping across the nation, WNBA star Brittany Griner vowed not to take the court during the national anthem for the entire season. With the much welcomed news that the Biden administration has secured her release from a Russian prison in exchange for notorious arms dealer Victor Boot, it's reasonable to ask if Griner will commit to no longer protesting the anthem of the country that secured her freedom. Despite the insistence by some on the left that America is systemically racist and homophobic, the entire country had the back of the Black and lesbian basketball legend. Everyone was pulling for her and her family. And for almost a year, the pressure to get her out of Russia came from all corners of society. The absurd 9-year sentence that Griner received for possession for a few canisters of cannabis oil appeared to be a clear effort by Russian President Vladimir Putin to gain leverage, and it seems to have worked. In exchange for her, the U.S. sent back to Russia one of the world's deadliest arms dealers, who was serving 25 years for crimes, including the targeting of American citizens. While some Republicans argue that Biden should have gotten more out of the deal, specifically the freedom of former Marine Paul Whelan, we can all agree that the U.S. paid a real price for Griner's release, not just by putting Boot back in the killing game, but also by sending a message to other foreign dictators that absconding with American citizens can be a powerful bargaining chip. That's a very real danger. But Griner is an American, one of our own. And as a nation, we have decided that whatever the risks of releasing Boot, the priority was her freedom. Speaking of freedom, one of our greatest freedoms is the right to protest. Griner and every American can and should protest if they see injustice, such as abuses of police power against Blacks or anyone. But by making the national anthem the symbol of that protest, Griner painted the whole of America as the source of these abuses. that same America that has now sacrificed so that she may come home. This summer, Greiner penned a handwritten note to President Biden, which included the following. On July 4th, our family normally honors the service of those who have fought for our freedom, including my father, who is a Vietnam War veteran. It hurts thinking about how I usually celebrate this day because freedom means something completely different to me this year. Indeed. Brittany Griner is not being asked to pay a debt to her country for the deal that ended her torment. It's simply what America does for Americans. But perhaps going forward, when she chooses to fight social injustice, she can remember that the United States is not just a place where injustice exists, what country doesn't have that, but also that America is a place that has gone to extraordinary lengths to save her life. Welcome home, Brittany Griner. America loves you. Standing for the Star Spangled Banner would be a very welcome way to show that you love her back. I'm David Marcus, author of Charade, The COVID Lies That Crushed a Nation.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. From the Fox News Podcasts Network, Fox News Rewind Financial Crisis 08, a look back at the biggest financial crisis since the Great Depression.
The market is not functioning properly.
Subscribe now at foxnewspodcasts.com.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.